This podcast is dedicated to Harley Litzo, my nephew, whom we tragically lost this weekend. Fly high, Harley. Managing Violence Podcast, episode 82, with Michael Julian from Alive Active Shooter Survival Training. The Managing Violence Podcast is proud to be partnered with Fuji Sports. Fuji Sports manufactures the highest quality of judo, jiu-jitsu, and MMA gear. Everything from gis to rashis, shorts, gloves, pads, bags, mats, finger tape, everything you could possibly need for training. I've personally been a customer and supporter of Fuji Sports dating back to my very first BJJ gi in 2007. Since then, they've been a go-to brand for me, whether I was chasing judo gear, BJJ gear, MMA gear, or just convenient bags to carry everything around in. The gi I wear to Krav Maga training now is actually a Fuji Sakai. It's one of the most comfortable and most durable gis I've ever owned. And yes, they even come in black for the ninjas in the audience. As a listener of the show, simply enter the discount code MVP10 at checkout for 10% off your order, and a percentage of the sale will also go to the show to keep us on the air. Savings for you, commission for us. What's not to love about that? MVP10 for 10% off at fujisports.com or fujisports.com.au for the Aussies. Some exclusions apply. Thank you, Fuji Sports, for years of high-quality gear and for supporting the show. Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Managing Violence Podcast. My name is Joe Saunders, and it is our mission here to equip our protectors, whether you are a protector by trade, protector by any other walk of life. If you seek to protect those around you, then we are the show for you. Folks, we are talking today to Michael Julian from Alive Active Shooter Training. Now, Michael is an expert in private security and in active shooter survival training. And sadly, this has become quite a topical episode as I record this intro today. We're hearing about an active shooter situation in Boulder, Colorado, which obviously is not long after the active shooter situation in Atlanta just last week. So my thoughts and prayers go out to those that are impacted by these tragedies that are ongoing. But it is more the reason that we must learn how to manage these situations. Sadly, it is not an issue that I believe my generation or our generation has adequately addressed. And it's not something that seems to be going away. So with that in mind, it's very important that we learn to manage it. And we can't live in denial about it. And Michael and I have a long chat about denial and how we can wake people up to deal with threats that are at our door. And that is something that we talk about at length in this podcast. Before we get to that, I would like to encourage you to check out our new website at violencepod.com. Built that from scratch. So if you do see anything that doesn't work, please let me know. I am a one-man show here. So it's quite possibly I've missed something that should work that doesn't. So please do let me know. I would also like to encourage you, please leave a review for the show. It's been a while since we've had any new reviews pop up. So if you're getting value out of the show, and I know that many of you are because I receive quite lovely personal messages, please consider contributing those reviews on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever it is you listen to the show, because it all helps. All right. Of course, also there is bonus content for this episode and many more, pretty much everything we've done since season 4 at our Patreon, patreon.com/managing violence. Or if you'd like to just give a shout out to the show financially with no ongoing commitment, then you can go to buymeacoffee.com/JoeMVP. That's enough of the plugs. It's time to get into the podcast with Mr. Michael Julian. I'm joined here in the Managing Violence Podcast by Michael Julian. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's a great pleasure, my friend. We've been connected in a few different ways over the years, and it's great to actually have you on the show and have a chat about a very important topic. So thank you for making yourself available. I know you're a busy dude.
My pleasure.
Mike, just for those that don't know you or don't know anything about you, let's start at the beginning. Give us a bit of an introduction. Who is Michael Julian? What's your professional background? And we'll go from there.
Sure. Michael Julian. I live in Southern California. I was born here, grew up in Northern Colorado. Family. I've got two amazing kids. My son's in the Marine Corps, as you can see, and my daughter's 18, about to start college. As far as my background, I was born into the world of private investigations and security. My dad started our company in 1967 after he was in the military and law enforcement. started his own business, and I have literally been in it since birth. It's really the only thing I know how to do. So luckily I'm able to do it and make money. Otherwise, I'm not sure what I would do. In 1997, he passed very suddenly. I was then thrown into a position of owning a business, knowing absolutely nothing about business. So I spent the next 20 years learning how to be a businessman, and have found that you could be the greatest of anything in the world, but if you don't know how to be a business person, you are probably going to fail. You'll probably go out of business. So that was a really good hard education, because I'm one of those guys that usually has to learn from mistakes rather than someone else's advice. So I've been doing private investigations and security my whole life, do executive protection. I've got three companies. One is the National Business Investigations, the PI firm. One is MPS Security and Protection, the Uniform Security and Executive Protection Company. And the other is Alive, which, as you know, is my active shooter survival training program.
Yeah, excellent. So I mean, Alive is the one that we're going to focus on for today, and talking a little bit about active shooter survival. We have done one episode previously with Alan Burris about his book of survivor shooting, which was interesting. But it's a good topic to revisit. I think it's a subject that, especially for those of us that are perhaps outside the U.S., where these incidents are a little bit more rare, and that we tend to sort of pay attention to it when it's in the media cycle, and then once it's passed, it's gone again, and we kind of just pretend it's never going to happen again. Tell us a little bit about the origin of Alive. Where did that come from? Where did the idea come from? How did it originate?
Sure. In 2013, I had this sense of anger and frustration and angst had built up to the point where I had to do something about it. And where it came from, the source of it was me watching videos and hearing stories about good people dying at the hands of bad people because the good people didn't know what to do. And as somebody I was born into this thing, the security mindset, the survival mindset, the situational awareness mindset is something that I have always known. It was drilled into me by my father. So when I was seeing videos of people doing absolutely nothing when somebody started shooting at them, or doing the wrong thing, and I'm going, you know, it's kind of like watching, you know, a sport and trying to yell at the TV at what the person you're rooting for should do instead of what they're doing. And I was like, you know, what is the problem here? Why are these people doing what they're doing? And I just realized they didn't know. Nobody ever told them what to do. Nobody ever taught them. They weren't born into a way of thinking that would give them the ability to do what they needed to do. So to satisfy my own sense of angst and frustration, I decided, well, I'm going to teach people. That's what I'm going to do. So I started taking different courses to learn how to teach active shooter survival. And with every course that I took, I found something that I disagreed with, or I believed with was wrong with their method of teaching survival. And finally, in a 2-day course, on the second day, I just went, okay, this is not okay. Look, I'm not putting other training down. Most training is better than no training. It just wasn't what I believed needed to be taught and how people should act to survive. So I literally at that point started scribbling down acronyms, and the best one I thought could possibly exist for this would be ALIVE, A-L-I-V-E. So then I just assigned what I believe to be very reasonable words to those letters, which came out to be assess, leave, impede, violence, and expose. And I basically call it, you know, run, hide, fight 2.0. It's the new and improved version, because the first version of anything is going to be flawed because it's the first one. It's not till you build something and then see how it works that you realize what's wrong with it and then improve upon it. And I believe that's what I've done with Alive. And since creating the program, launching it in 2014, teaching employees in, you know, businesses all over the country. And then I wrote the book, 10 Minutes to Live, and then I created the online course, and now I've got an instructor certification course. So I've duplicated myself for people all over the world to go out and teach this life-saving information.
Yeah, excellent. We'll unpack a lot of that as we go. I'm curious to know, it's a very different culture in the US versus what I'm used to here in Australia, and some of our listeners throughout Europe will be exposed to. And obviously Europe isn't one culture. There's a lot of different nuances throughout Europe. But I'm curious to know, like, from your experience in the US, what has been the uptake for active shooter training? Is it something that people or organizations are open to? Is it something that you've got to try and convince them they need? What's that like?
That's such a great question, Joe. Unfortunately, there is this thing called the optimism bias that I actually address in the very first chapter of my book. And the title of the chapter is, "It Won't Ever Happen to Me." People live in a state of denial sometimes because it's easier to just deny it'll ever happen than accept the fact that it could and do what is necessary to prepare for it. So in every class that I've given before COVID, I always take a survey. Who here has had active shooter survival training? And maybe a group of 40, 50, 60 people, three people, four people might say, "I saw the Run, Hide, Fight video." Maybe somebody had actually taken the training by video or in person somewhere else. And so it's come down to the fact that 98% of the people in America have no idea how to properly react or were never trained in a real method, a tactical method to survive an active shooter. So I realized that this is something that needs to happen.
Yeah, and certainly from my experience doing similar style of training for corporate organizations, it's sometimes the hardest battle is convincing them they actually need it.
Absolutely.
And that the training won't do more damage than lack of training. Sometimes there's an argument of, well, we don't want to scare our people. It's like, well, do you want to scare them? You want to not scare them, or do you want to prepare them?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, when you're talking about selling this program to HR managers, risk managers, safety and security managers, who ultimately have to go to the bean counters and ask for money to pay for it, the bean counters are going, well, you know, this is really proactive and preventative, and it'll really probably never, ever happen here because we've got locks on the doors. So they don't want to spend the money. But there are many HR risk managers out there with a very proactive attitude who go, yeah, absolutely, we have to have this training. And in some industries like healthcare, it's mandatory in California. You have to do it annually. So, Joe, it's the energy's building, people are becoming more aware, and you can't believe after every active shooter, active killer event, my phone rings off the hook for 2 weeks because everyone who said it'll never happen to me, who owns a warehouse or manufacturing facility, and there's an active shooter and five people are killed in a warehouse or a manufacturing facility, suddenly they're like, oh, maybe it can happen to me, and they start calling.
Yeah, and look, I think active shooters or active shooter situations or scenarios, they're something that I think we attach to a modern phenomenon, but they're not modern, right? There's always been active shooting events. There's always been mass killings of some sort, regardless of whether it's with a firearm or whether it's with a knife or whether it's with a vehicle. There's always been mass killing events. That said, it does feel like, and it might just be selection bias. It may just be what's in front of us because of the media, but it does feel like since the late 90s, the pace of active shooter events has picked up in terms of the frequency. Is that your experience as well? And what do you attach to that?
Yes. And the reason is because the Columbine High School massacre in Littleton, Colorado, that was such a horrendous catastrophic, like epic event. And I don't want to use the word epic. It was a horrible thing that was 2 years in the making. And then, you know, the media just went crazy with it. And it became a phenomenon. That's when the label active shooter came about after that. Yes, there have been mass killings going back hundreds of years. In America, they weren't always with firearms either. I know, you know, firearms are not as big an issue in Australia. You know, there's multiple events of mass killings with things like explosions, fire, vehicles, you know, blunt weapons, edge weapons, for sure. That's a huge problem in many countries. So this is not new, but since Columbine happened and all the notoriety and all that, it unfortunately planted the seed in a lot of people's heads who don't have the coping skills to deal with their own psychological anger, ideological issues, to process them in a much healthier way than this. And that's where they got the idea from.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for just the mass media, I won't say popularization because it's probably the wrong word, but the exposure to the incident. I mean, it's well known in psychological circles that if you have a high profile celebrity suicide, that generally speaking, suicide rates on average will increase because people are aware of it. It becomes it's in the media. It's something that they're thinking about more often, and therefore it becomes a more viable solution. And I do wonder, I mean, well, we're talking about Columbine. That was right around the advent of the 24/7 media cycle when we could really have fixated coverage on one particular topic. And I think you can make an argument that's fed into lone wolf terrorism or lone extremist terrorism and that sort of thing as well, where what would have otherwise just been one disaffected person now is emboldened by a cause or has access to information about how to do it better or do it bigger. And they know that gives them a little bit of notoriety because the media is going to cover it. Let's talk a little bit about some active, let's talk a little bit about some proactive tips, I guess. For those that are listening that maybe haven't had access to training or that don't know how to access training potentially in their country, it's not something that's commonly available in a lot of places. What do you cover in your actual material? What do you cover in your training?
Well, first of all, one of the biggest differences between my program and every other program I've seen is most programs talk about the methodology, the functionality, what you should do with your body, where you should go, what you should do with your hands and your arms and calling on the cell phone and all this stuff. Very, very valuable. But really, that's the second step. The first step is, and this is what I really drive home, you have got to put yourself mentally in a place to carry out all of that functionality and methodology that you know appropriately and properly, because you could be the best at anything physically, but if you're not prepared mentally to do what you know how to do physically, you're not going to be as good as you could be. So I start with just changing the landscape and saying, okay, everybody, you need to learn where your brain, where your mindset, where your head needs to be first before you even think about what to do with your body. So proactively, and by the way, I teach two different schools. I teach the security mindset, which is the proactive, you know, it's the first thing you do up until an event begins. And then you kick into the survival mindset, security mindset, which is preventative measures, avoidance, staying out of a situation that's going to hurt you. That all comes to an end. Doesn't matter now. You're in a situation where you've got to survive. Survival mindset kicks in. Now you go through the survival mindset and survival methodology to, you know, live through a situation like that. That is really the very first thing that I talk about. And that is all about the first letter in the acronym, which is A for assess. The assess process is 100% mental. Then you go into the physical functionality with leave, impede, and violence if necessary. So that's where I start everything.
Yeah, that assessment stage, the situational awareness, coming to terms with what's around you and at least acknowledging it and not being in denial of it. I mean, how many times have we heard tragic reports from active shooter events where someone said, "Oh, I thought it was fireworks," or I thought it was construction work.
Far backfiring.
Yeah, over and over and over. I can't disclose too many details because I don't know whether I'm going to be in trouble for this. But I had an incident where I was running a security team at a large public event, and the state of the private security industry is probably similar in America than it is here in terms of your overall quality can be up and down. But I was running a team of a couple of hundred guards at an event that had the potential to attract a lot of attention and was a mass gathering. And there was going to be fireworks. And I said, because of things that have been happening in the national security picture here in Australia, we had some recent terrorism arrests. We knew there were some major attacks planned in our city that had been disrupted. And I said, guys, when the fireworks go off, do not, for the love of God, look at the fireworks. Like, you need to be looking at the crowd, because if I was going to open fire on a crowd, I would time it with the fireworks, because, yeah, right, makes sense. And I turned around and when the fireworks went off, I turned around and 70% of my guards were staring at the fireworks. You know, they were filming the fireworks, which blew my mind because I've never once watched a video of fireworks that I recorded 6 months ago. So I'm not sure yeah. what the point was. But that kind of denial, even amongst those that are supposed to be protecting people, even amongst those that are supposed to have security awareness, is disastrous, right? Because that's the moment of opportunity that. I guess shooters or predators or terrorists, that's what they're waiting for. That first couple of seconds where they get to operate without being noticed. How do you overcome that? How do you overcome that denial? When you're dealing with regular people that maybe are possibly even taking your training under duress, they don't think they need it. They've just been told they have to do it. How do you wake them up?
Another great question, Joe. You're a great interviewer. You're setting me up. You're teeing me up perfectly because this is the stuff I get excited about. I'm very passionate about this. In my program, I do some things that some may feel are a little bit over the top or unorthodox. For instance, I show videos of actual active shooter, active killer, active assailant incidences where people die. Now, they're not graphic. You don't see blood. Oftentimes it's CCTV, black and white, grainy, whatever. But the point is, I put them in the bird's eye view of what is happening in this situation so they know it's real. And I make everybody do an evaluation because I love to hear feedback. What can I do to be better at this to get the message to people? And so many people always say, first question, what did you like the most about the program? They answer, what did you like the least about the program? A lot of people, best, I love the videos. A lot of people say the worst, I hated the videos. And then on the next line they say, but I'm glad I saw them because it made it real. The reality of these situations, which so many people want to deny, and believe it or not, there's companies for sure in America, in certain parts of like Northern California, a lot of tech companies that employ a lot of millennials and younger people, they have this culture of, well, we don't like violence. We don't accept violence. We don't even talk about violence here. So we don't want your program because violence is the V in alive. And I say to them, okay, did you make sure that all of the people that want to be an active shooter and come on your campus and kill a bunch of people know that you don't allow it here? Because they don't care. And when some bad person brings violence to your doorstep, you need to be prepared to answer it with violence if necessary. So that's the big thing. The reality, like you said, I sometimes have shocked people into the reality. One of the things I do is an exercise, and I basically call it, could you take another human life? And I somebody always raises their hand and I say, do I have your permission to change your mind? And they're like, sure. And I take them through this journey. It takes 5 to 10 minutes sometimes. That is a very emotional journey and very personal to them. And by the end, every single person I have done this to in the hundreds of classes that I have taught, everyone comes to the realization that they could, in fact, if necessary, take another human life if it meant saving their children, their loved ones, or themselves.
Yeah, very very similar to conversation I just had with Lee Morrison in one of our recent episodes about accessing that mindset of doing something that you feel like is out of character for you or something that you've been programmed since birth to be morally reprehensible. And certainly we never want to encourage people to be able to take a life. But if you look at our DNA, our evolution, I mean, we're all probably descended from someone who took a life at some point, right? There's at some point, one of our ancestors made that choice, and that's the reason we're still here. So it is in there, but it's hard when you're socialized out of it to be able to tap back in and acknowledge that it might be okay under very limited circumstances. And that permission is so important. And deviate a little bit from the active shooter training, but it's something that we've talked about a lot with, especially with women's self-defense and sort of short course women's self-defense training. We're getting women especially are socialized away from violence, even more so than men, and getting them to give themselves permission even to defend themselves, permission to fight back, permission to actually be aggressive in the situation is half the battle. It's not about the physical skills, and the physical skills are instinctive. You can rip and claw and bite and that kind of stuff without any training. It's about giving yourself mental permission to do it. And I think what you're talking about there, especially with the V and alive, like if you get to a point where you have to fight someone who is actively trying to kill you, you better give yourself permission to do whatever is needed to do, whatever is needed to be able to survive that situation.
Yep. Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about, I know you've had a couple of success stories. Have you got any that you'd like to share with the audience just in terms of people applying your training?
Yeah, I'll share with the audience something that completely changed my life. The third most profound event of my existence was the first and second were my son being born and then my daughter being born. That was life-changing and, you know, amazing. The third is when one of my students from a couple of years prior, her employer brought me in to train all the employees. And right around the middle of October 2017, I got an email from a woman named Liz Moreno. And Liz said, hey, you probably don't remember me, but blah, blah, blah. Remember when, and you came in and great program, but I never thought I would ever need it. But on October 1st, 2017, I was at the Route 91 Las Vegas Country Music Festival near Mandalay Bay. And she told me the story. She said, we're there, we're watching Jason Aldean sing, we're having a good time, we're in front of the stage, and we hear what we immediately thought were firecrackers, just like you said. And by the way, a lot of people have never heard, probably more in Australia than America, have never heard what a gun sounds like in person. They know what it sounds like from TV and movies, which is oftentimes very different than the reality of things. So fireworks or some, you know, somebody threw some firecrackers in the audience until she said, and then all of a sudden chaos broke loose and they're like going, what in the world is happening? And she said, she turned around at that very moment. She saw a woman shot in the head and a man shot in the chest right behind her. And she said, obviously realized what was going on. Her and her boyfriend immediately hit the ground. And she said, when she did that, she put her hands over her head and then bam. She said, it was like all of a sudden the light bulb went on and your training came back to me. It was in her subconscious. It came to this conscious. And she said, I immediately became calm and I knew what to do. So she turned to her boyfriend and said, as soon as the shooting stops, because obviously he had to reload, we're leaving. And he goes, no, we're safer here. Everybody's laying down. She said, sorry, look, you're coming with me or you're not, but I'm leaving. So that's what they did. They jumped up, held hands and ran, and they made it out safely. And she said, I believe that it's your training that gave me the state of mind and the knowledge of what to do. That's what saved my life because, you know, 58 people lost their lives on that field right where they were. So, she came to my office, I invited her down and we talked in person and it became very emotional. She said, I haven't been able to talk about this with anybody. So she got emotional and it kind of choked me up a little bit. It's a pretty big deal. But when somebody looks you in the eye and says, you or something you did or created or taught saved my life, it's a game changer, man. And at that moment, I mean, I get chills just telling the story every time I tell that story. And I said, at that moment, I was done. I had a meeting with my executive staff for my other two companies. And I said, I have a new calling in life, you know, and frankly, I was burned out because I've been doing investigations and security my whole life. It was time for something to re-energize me. And that was it. And I focused 90% of my attention on this program now, and now it's international and, you know, I've got more instructors and stuff. So, and it's very, very fulfilling to me. So that was a game changer for me.
Yeah, the Vegas shooting. I remember watching the coverage live. I was working in a campus security manager role at that particular time in a heightened threat environment, and I remember watching that happen. And we thought initially it was a terrorist attack because it just the volume. But I mean, in terms of an active shooter event, that is pretty much the worst case scenario, right? Elevated position, you can't get to the shooter. No one knows where the gunfire is coming from. Big open field, mass panic. You've got exits being obstructed, egress being obstructed by bodies and just massive humanity. And the fact that the most people under duress will not run, they'll hide. They'll make themselves small and they'll lay down until it goes away.
Yeah.
If you're shooting from an elevated position,
their eyes. If I can't see them, they can't see me.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're shooting from an elevated position, that's even better, right? I mean, yeah. They're now a bigger target and they're stationary. So that is one of the worst possible scenarios I can think of in terms of being able to escape an active shooting event. So the fact that your training was able to save a life there is profound, and even all the more reason why more people need to know what to do, because had she listened to her boyfriend's advice, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So thank goodness. But that's, you know, to your question, that is the example that's made the greatest impact in my life when it comes to this program. And so I've stayed in touch with her. It's a game changer, like I said.
How, for those of us that live in cultures where perhaps active shooting events aren't as common, because I mean, just access to firearms is harder to come by, and therefore there's less people with guns, and therefore less shootings. But it's not like the threat has disappeared just because the weapon has changed.
No.
How do these principles apply to something like an edge weapon attack, or even a vehicle attack? How do you apply that? Do you adapt that training for those sort of audiences?
Sure. Another great question. I've actually got 5 instructors in Australia, certified instructors in Australia, who are applying this with edged weapons or vehicles or, you know, baseball bats, swords, whatever. This, first of all, remember, 50% of this program is mindset. It's security mindset, being aware, staying away from potentially dangerous situations, situational awareness, looking around, keeping your head up, head on a swivel, acknowledging potential threats or violence. So that can be applied anywhere. It doesn't matter, right? You're already prepared to react to something, which I call being proactively reactionary. But this can apply to any kind of violence. Somebody has a baseball bat, somebody has an edge weapon, which are the number 2 killer. You can still apply these principles, these steps to survive that situation exactly as if there was a gun. You know, your chances of survival are going to be better with this program, no matter what the violence, even with the vehicle. You know, first of all, the situational awareness, and then identifying the threat, and then, okay, assess, lock it down, take all the emotion out of what your reaction would normally be. Because look, if you've ever been in an argument with a girlfriend or wife or significant other, and it gets emotional, now you start doing and saying things that are counterproductive to a healthy resolution. If you lock the emotion out and you go to strategical, rational thinking, you're probably going to make good, better decisions that will help you in your survival. So that can be applied not just to violence, inner communication skills. You know, you can apply that stuff anywhere in life.
Absolutely. I think to take away the emotion and to problem solve is the hardest thing for people that are thrust into a situation they've got no mental blueprint for. And it's one thing I encourage people is if you can't take training, at least study something and get some sort of level of familiarity so that under crisis, your brain has a blueprint to fall back upon and go, you know what? I don't know exactly what to do, but here's some steps I've thought about previously. Because I firmly believe that under life-altering stress, you cannot think creatively. It's not a time to come up with a new plan. There's no new plans available. It's only what you've trained. It's what you've rehearsed. It's what you've planned to do in the past.
Yeah, and based on what you just said, I want to make this point. You just said about something I've thought of previously. Now, that is proactive reactionism. And part of my program and part of what we teach, another exercise and journey that we take the student through is I stop and I say, okay, now everybody, whoever's comfortable closing your eyes, because not everybody's comfortable in a group closing their eyes. I say, close your eyes. I want to take you down a road that is going to literally teach you mentally how to react to a situation and be prepared for it. Then I lower my voice. I get kind of like meditative, like a, you know, smooth voice. And I say, okay, now close your eyes. Now picture yourself where you spend the majority of your day. If it's at a desk, in an office, in a warehouse, in a production line, whatever, I want you to think about where you are. Now I want you to, in your mind's eye, I want you to smell the smells. I want you to hear the sounds. Do you hear machinery? Do you smell petroleum? Do you smell the ink from the printer in the next room? What do you hear? What's your butt feel like on the chair that you're in? I want you to immerse yourself in this, you know, in this realization, in this imaginary situation. Now, where you're at right now, all of a sudden you hear gunshots. So picture where they might be coming from in your scenario. You know, are they outside a window, whatever. And then I walk them through the steps of alive. How would you react using those five steps of alive to survive that situation? Then I back them up and I say, okay, same thing. You're sitting there, nothing. All of a sudden you hear gunshots, or maybe in your situation, it's not gunshots. It's somebody yelling from the reception area saying, I'm going to stab you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to cut your throat with an edged weapon, whatever. Now go through the process because they're in a different location. Everything changes. Now you're going to be able to leave because you're close to a door and the person's not blocking the door. So I take them through what I call that visualization exercise to literally train them. So if it ever happens, they have already thought it through instead of going, wow, everything is, it's chaos. There's a killer. What do I do? You've already thought it through. You're that much closer to a healthy resolution rather than, you know, doing what a lot of people do. Joe, people, I've seen this, people literally freeze in terror and do nothing and die because they could have done almost anything and survived the situation, but they didn't know better. They weren't mentally or physically prepared to do that. And that's what brought me to this whole thing. I can't watch that happen. I can't sit by and let people die because nobody told them what to do.
Yeah, that freeze is so powerful when you're overwhelmed. I had a student years ago who told me that she'd had a home invasion in the middle of the night. She'd woken up. She knew someone was in the house. She literally had her phone beside the bed, and she couldn't bring herself to pick up the phone and call 000, call emergency services here, because she was frozen. And she's like, what could I have done? I'm like, you just need to break the freeze. You just need to do anything. Literally, if you cough, it will break the freeze. But while you lay there frozen in panic, I mean, she was fortunate that the home intruders, they were just after whatever they could grab. They grabbed some car keys. They stole the car. They were gone. It wasn't with intention for violence. But I mean, that she was rocked more, less by the event and more by her lack of action is what actually caused her the trauma later, was that she didn't do anything. And that's what she kept replaying, was that freeze, not necessarily the intrusion, but the freeze. And I think just that's why there's so much value in what you do and what we do in terms of preparing people just to have some idea of what they can do in those situations.
Yeah. Imagine this poor woman that you're talking about after freezing, now living with the fact and realization that she was completely helpless and now believing with zero confidence in her own abilities to do something, the right thing, anything the next time. Not only is she freaked out from what happened, but now she lives in fear of the thought that if it ever happens again, I won't be able to do anything. And you said it, you've got, like you said, cough, you break the freeze. The very first part of assess, and I drill this into people, I said the very first thing you do when you realize it is an active killer or violence, you're facing a violent situation,
you take a deep breath and you let it out. Now that took a second, right?
It means block everything else out, focus on taking that deep breath, get a burst of oxygen to your lungs, which goes to your organs because now the adrenaline's pumping, and now you center and you focus. And just like that, that take a deep breath was, like you said, cough to break the freeze. That's what you do.
Yeah, I think it's so important too when we do these visualization exercises that you consider the variables. And I like the way you said you put yourself in the situation with the sights, the smells, the sounds, all that. Something else that I do, and I'm sure you probably do the same thing as well, is visualizing different variables that may be in play, right? So for example, I spent most of my life thinking about how I would manage a situation if I'm out on my own, for example, because I was usually working in these high risk environments. I've got four kids ranging from 2 to 8 years old, right? So if I'm out in a public event with four kids, one of whom is, you know, a hazard to herself at the best of times, and two of them that aren't able to run fast, and my wife who has a slip disc at the moment and has impaired mobility, at least in terms of full functionality, like that changes my response options significantly. What am I going to do? It's like, sorry guys, I'm out of here. You guys fend for yourself. Like, I mean, that I have to visualize that. I have to think about how am I going to manage that with, how am I going to carry four kids and help my wife through a crowd at the moment? It's a challenge.
100%. And it changes the dynamic. It changes the scenario. That's why I say go through that scenario. And I tell people, apply this in other places. If you're going to go to a theater with your family, sit in a strategic location, because, and there might be, you know, two exits there and two exits here that the bad guy's going to come through. So roll through those scenarios. And one of them is going to be, you're not just saving your own hide. You've got now your family to save as well, which may completely change the way you react.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's something, part of my role is I'm a consultant for security to houses of worship. And I mean, that's a vulnerable environment, right? You're going to have a lot of people around that are mixed demographic. You're going to have a population of elderly folks. You're going to have young kids. You're going to have people that, for better or worse, tend to believe the best in everybody and will therefore not be as proactive when it comes to their security necessarily. And one of the things I talk about with churches is the hardest thing about securing a church is that the people that you'd normally turn away from a venue are the people that you want to have inside your church, right? Yeah. The people that most need to be there. So it's a challenge when it comes to your proactive security. But one thing I've tried to instill in my clients and in my own church is that, guys, we may have to default to fight as opposed to run or hide, because the venue doesn't allow for hiding and running isn't going to be a viable option for most of our people. So Someone's going to have to actively engage, and it may just be that you're the one that's going to soak up the bullets, but it's rough, but you've got to get that mindset.
Yeah. And you know, I'm asked all the time, usually by women, because obviously I talk about, and you probably have heard of Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, retired.
He's been on the show. Yeah.
He has been on the show.
Yeah.
I love Dave. That is an awesome dude. I love that guy. He is. I got a picture back there with him. That bottom picture is me and him. He's a character. Wait, what were we talking about? I got all sidetracked with the Dave Grossman thing.
House of worship and defaulting to fight. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So sheep, wolves, and sheepdogs. He didn't coin that, but he's the one that made it famous. Somebody else said it. He talked about it. So people ask me, how do I know if I'm a sheepdog, and, or how do I know what I'm going to do under the circumstances, the stress and the chaos? How do I know if I'm going to do, you know, what I should do? And I say, I'm not here to tell anybody to be a hero, but I will tell you this, you're probably already pre-wired. And your reaction is going to be one or the other. It's going to be get out of there or freeze, unfortunately. But there are people, a lot of people in the industry like we are, we're pre-wired to be sheepdogs, and we are probably going to go towards the gunfire or the threat because we've already thought it through. It's in our DNA, and we realize that we may be the only hope or one of the only hopes for saving everybody else, because if we don't, then we're all going to die. And there are people, and we had two schools, very unfortunate situations in America, one high school in Colorado and one private college, and I think it was North Carolina. People came through the door with guns, and both young males were wired this way. They immediately charged after, grabbed the gunman, took him down, and in doing so, both situation, those two young men perished, but they saved everybody else in the room. Had they not done what they did, they probably would have been shot and killed anyway, because they were the closest person to the gunman, and then the gunman would have killed everybody else. So sometimes it's just an instinctive response to go towards the threat because we feel like we're going to eliminate it. Doesn't mean you have to, but you're in that mindset of doing so.
Yeah, it's already a really bad day. Sometimes you just have to do what feels like needs to be done. And it's amazing, actually. I've read a number of stories now where shooting events or mass killings of other types have been disrupted. And it seems disproportionately that it's high school wrestlers and rugby players that seem to be the ones that end up taking the lead. I don't know if it's just physical confidence in their skill set or if it's just they're used to doing things that are really uncomfortable. It is interesting that, you know, even, the guy's name escapes me, but the Let's Roll guy, from 9/11, he was a judo player. Right? Yeah.
So I find that really interesting. It's another encouragement I have to people to go do some martial arts or go do some combat sports, get used to doing hard things, because it might make a difference mentally, if not physically.
And, you know, Joe, I literally just yesterday, I'm doing this, I'm putting videos out there on LinkedIn and Instagram and stuff like that. And I'm doing this one little mini series on executive protection, mostly getting into the industry. But one of the videos I made that should be coming out soon is about, and it was for, it's Women's History Month. I don't know if you have that there, but it's okay. So I did a couple of videos for women, and I said, ladies, you have got, if you don't have self-defense training, I don't care how limited it is. If you've got no self-defense training, you have very little, if any, possibility of surviving or going out unscathed of a situation. But two things happen when you do. One, you learn how to react. You learn what you're supposed to do. And two, the psychological side of things, which, as you can tell, I'm really big into the mindset. It gives you a sense of confidence so that you don't freeze, so that you do react properly. And not only that, the next step is, if you are confident in a situation like that, you will not appear to be an easy target. So predators will not target you. I talk about, you know, women walking through a dark a parking lot at night. The woman that walks through, you know, with her head in her purse or fakes in her phone or whatever, looking, you know, scared anyway, that is an easy target, and a predator is going to immediately zoom in on there. But if a gal walks through with her chest, you know, her shoulders out back, and, you know, her head on a swivel and her looking confident, you know, and like, okay, bring it on. Most predators are going to say, no, I'm probably not going to succeed in getting away with stealing her purse or doing whatever I want to do with this person. So not only does it give you the, again, methodology, but it gives you the mindset, which then translates into the confidence that will even keep predators from looking in your direction. So you're right. And the self-defense, so many people, not even men, I tell everybody, if you get nothing out of my program, take your kids down and join a taekwondo dojong and spend an hour a week with them there. Just learn something on how to defend yourself.
Yeah. It's just making yourself a marginally harder target. I mean, you don't have to be invincible, but it's like that old saying, if you and your friend are running from a bear, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just have to be faster than your friend.
Right? Yep.
Just make sure it's not you. let them pick somebody else. As we're coming to a conclusion, Mike, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about some of your training offerings, especially the online training, since we do have a global audience. And in this weird sort of pandemic era, it's harder to do face-to-face training. And also, let's talk a little bit about your book.
Sure. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that. So, the book is called 10 Minutes to Live, Surviving an Active Shooter Using Alive. The reason it is called 10 Minutes to Live is because the most catastrophic active killer events in that we know of, especially since, you know, 1999, only lasted 10 minutes. The Virginia Tech College massacre, the Las Vegas massacre lasted exactly 10 minutes. 69% of these events last less than 5 minutes. So what I do, and the whole reason I talk about 10 minutes, is I give people a finish line. I give them a goal, a completion point. If they're focused on the fact that they're going to die and I don't know how long this is going to last, and they become defeated and they're like, I can't, you know, I'm going to die. And that's the defeated mindset, the victim mindset. So statistically speaking, if you last 10 minutes, you're going to live through this deal. So that's why it's called 10 Minutes to Live. It is basically a survival manual based on my program. I took my in-person program and I translated it into written words, and I am no literary genius. So it's just like the conversation we just had. So a 12-year-olds, young tweens and teens have read this and could comprehend it easily. You can get that on our website, which is activeshootersurvivaltraining.com. You can get it on Amazon, the Aziz International Bookstore has it, the SHRM, which is a Society of Human Resource Managers, big in, you know, in the States, their bookstore has it. But it's on our website. It's easy to find. And then the online program, there's three different options: a 3-hour comprehensive, which is my entire presentation. Most of it is video of me giving the presentation, but there's surveys and tests and, you know, downloadable content and stuff like that. And you get a certificate. That's 3 hours. I cut that into 1 hour because some people didn't want to spend 3 hours in front of a computer. And then I cut that into 20 minutes if you just want a taste to see if you like it. Or a lot of companies use it as the annual refresher. So they take the 3 hour and then their employees take it a year later. They take the 20 minute. That is, you can get it through the activeshootersurvivaltraining.com or go direct to that with aliveactiveshooter.com. And then the one thing that's really hot right now that I'm really proud of, that I'm actually going to the Byron Rogers Protector Symposium all weekend, I'll be talking about the T3 or the instructor certification course. And that is a 2-day online all day course. I got guys from all over the world attending once a month. And that is where I teach you how to teach the Alive program. With it, you get a book, you get access to the 3-hour course, which you have to complete both before you start the course. And then I go into some intensive training, why I teach what I do. I break down the videos. I tell them, this is how you deliver it. This is how you do the visualization exercise, the could I take another human life exercise. I spent an hour and a half on marketing it because they now have their own in-house, like you as a security practitioner and a business owner. After 2 days, you can literally take this course and on Monday, start teaching it. I give you the PowerPoint. I give you the marketing material. I talk to you about insurance, all of that stuff. So you can literally add a new revenue stream of teaching active shooter survival to your core business. So those are my offerings and it can all be found on our website.
Very cool. Thank you very much for that, Mike. It's been a pleasure to pick your brain and to have this conversation. It's a topic that not a lot of people want to talk about, but obviously the whole point of this podcast is to have conversations that people don't usually like to have. So I'm grateful for you to make yourself available for it. I know you're going to stick around and do some bonus questions with us, but for those that might be leaving us here, I just want to thank you on behalf of myself and also our listeners for your time and making yourself available for it.
It's been a true pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Folks, what a great conversation that was with Michael. I had a great time talking to him about a very difficult subject, and it's something that I wish wasn't important, but it is. And I guess we could probably say that about most of the show. I wish a lot of these topics weren't important, but they are. And I hope you guys got some value out of that. I hope it's something that you'll add to your wheelhouse. Consider taking Michael up on some of his training, because I know this is on his heart to be able to do this for a lot of people. So please consider doing that. On that note, folks, that is it for this week. Apologies if I'm a little bit off my game with these intros and outros, as you heard at the outset, dealing with a little bit of a family tragedy at the moment, but onwards and upwards. And we'll be back next week with the one and only Beverly Baker. So make sure you check that out. Until then, I'll talk to you next time.